of Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap with the late Steve Grimmett of Grim Reaper and John Gallagher of Raven. And so there's still some copies left. I mean, but once all copies are gone, they're gone for good. So you can find them on my Bandcamp. And I think there's about less than 20 left.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. But yeah, like I managed to get together with my very first label. So that's very important. That's very big for me. You know, even though it's an a label is a label, even if it's a smaller independent label, it's still a great thing to happen. So I'm really proud of that. And as for newer music that'll be coming out after that, it's to be determined. I'm in the writing stages right now. But I've got a lot of other stuff going on as well. I even just started writing a book too. So,
wow.
And then I'm still doing the film stuff as well, still auditioning as usual. So yeah, and still training with martial arts as well, since I do that for film as well. So yeah, I like to keep busy.
So speaking about that Dirty Deeds single, I'd kind of like to know how you met Steve Grimmett and John Gallagher of Raven. You know, how did that all come about?
So John is the one. I actually met John first. Well, funny enough, I first met John and Steve through social media. Like, I just contacted them as fans of their work. And John is the one I interacted with first, which I think had to have been in 2011, 2012, I believe. And I was running a fan page for Paul Deano's Battle Zone and Paul Deano's Killers. Paul Deano's a buddy of mine as well. And, you know, I just support what he does and all that. And I really, you know, aside from being a friend, I really admire him as a musician. And he was a very huge influence on me. And I thought his music from Battle Zone and Killers didn't get enough appreciation. So I wanted to make a Facebook page of that for him. And John Gallagher was with Paul Deano's Killers for a short amount of time and appeared on a live recording album that he did with Killers. And so that was how I kind of connected with John. And then I was of course into Raven as well. And then John and I, like, we just, and then first time I met John in person was in Buffalo, New York, and towards the end of 2013. So almost 10 years ago, I first met John in person. And like, he knew who I was because we had chatted online a bunch and all that. So like, I got to meet him in person, and then I saw him, and we would just, every time he was in the same town as me, Raven is in the same town as me, I always go and support them because, you know, they're friends of mine, and, you know, John's a really good friend of mine. You know, I owe it to them. So yeah. It was mainly just through social media first, and then I just started meeting them in person. And last time I saw them was this past September in Santa Ana, California, because I'm here in Los Angeles now. But I even saw them in Florida when I was living in Florida before LA. So
right.
I've said to them every time I see them, anytime you guys are in the same town as me, I will be there to support. And yeah, they're great guys. They're very wonderful and they're very good to their fans. And, you know, they deserve the absolute best. So with that, and then with Steve, same thing. Steve, I had like interacted through social media first, you know, as a fan of Grim Reaper. And then the first time I had met Steve was at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood when Grim Reaper played. And, Steve was just taking time to meet fans after the show and all that. And as I approached him, he's like, "Hey, I know you." I'm like, yeah, we're friends on Facebook. I'm Ed Gage. He's like, "Oh, Ed, yeah, I remember you. How are you?" And like, we caught up for a few minutes and then we got a picture together. It was after the unfortunate amputation that had occurred.
Right.
And, you know, the one thing I love about Steve is, you know, he loved his fans so much and, you know, he really didn't take his fans or what he had for granted. He appreciated everything. He was grateful for what he had in his career as a musician. And it's not many musicians are like that. Some musicians, they get a little too ahead of themselves and take what they have for granted. But Steve wasn't one of those people. And that's what really made Steve unique as a musician. And that's why I don't really think Steve's personality could ever be replicated.
Right.
And that was that. And I was supposed to see him. There was three other times I was supposed to see him. I was supposed to see him in late 2019, but I had got booked for a commercial for Gucci eyewear as a heavy metal musician. And we shot it at Amoeba Records, not entirely too far from the Whiskey, but I didn't get a chance to catch up with him because we had a night shoot. So there was that. And then Grim Reaper was going to be touring in 2020, and then COVID hit. And then I was supposed to see him this past November, but then in this past August, you know, the universe had other plans, unfortunately. Right. And that's how I got to know them, was originally first through social media, and then we met in person when they were in the same town as me.
All right. That's cool, man. You got to work with people you grew up listening to too, as well. So
it's amazing. You know,
definitely something to be grateful.
That's one thing I like to look back on. You know, I look back and I think of how I grew up as a fan of them. And then, you know, years later, I get to not just be friends with them, but getting to work with them too. It's, right. It's definitely one of those things, you know, you definitely have to, you know, acknowledge it's luck, but it's definitely something to be grateful for, you know. It's, right. I'm really blessed that I got to know Steve.
So kind of moving on to some of your original music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like going into write and record Moth to the Flames, the EP?
Moth to the Flame, there's actually a very crazy story behind how that was written. So the lyrics were actually, even though I came up with the concept, the lyrics were written by help, because he helped me out with it, and he recorded bass on the track, the title track too. Rick Fox from the band Steeler, and for those who aren't familiar with Steeler, that was Yngwie Malmsteen and Ron Keel's debut band when Yngwie was only 19 years old. So Rick was the bassist on the Steeler album. And before that, he was a part of the early formation days of Wasp before they recorded. He was on the demos. And how Moth to the Flame came to fruition was this. And even though I didn't release it until 2021, it was recorded in 2018, actually. And it was on the shelf for so long, but I finally wanted to get it out there. But anyways, so when I had, in May 2018, I had posted a screenshot of my appearance in the TV show Westworld, which I had did some stunt work for a battle scene. And I remember there's a really good shot of me just turning around and shooting a musket. And I thought it was I was just so happy that the footage made it into the final cut. The only footage I was mad that didn't make it into the final cut was when they put squibs on my back to make it look like I got shot in the back, and that footage was never used. So I was pretty bummed about that, but I still got some good footage out of it, which was the good part. But anyways, so when I had that really good screenshot of me holding the musket, everybody on social media was just bombarding me with messages, even people I had never even interacted with, even people that never gave me the time of day years ago in my youth, and people that all of a sudden kind of wanted a piece of the action, and only wanted to acknowledge me, just for, because I did something, spectacular at the time of. And then I remember one of these people that, it was a person I think that gave me a hard time back then. They all of a sudden wanted my advice and wanted my help. And it's dude, you made my life a living hell back then. Why the fuck would I want to help you? I try to be humble about it, but it's I can't really separate, when somebody mistreats me and then all of a sudden wants my help. It's one of those things, you kind of look back and you say, you treated me like garbage. Why do you want my help all of a sudden? And it just tells you how the world can be. And so when I vented out about it to Rick, because you know Rick and I is like, Ricky and his late wife Tamara, they were very much like the aunt and uncle I never had. So I had a really good bond with them. So when I vented out about it to Rick, the one thing I said to Rick that, you know, like, I don't, all these people all of a sudden are paying attention to me. And now all of a sudden, like, apparently I'm relevant to them, you know, I mean, but now like they're trying to ask me for my help. And it's like, I don't want to do that. I mean, especially after the way I got treated by them. And he said to me was this: when people see that you're doing well in life and they see that you're doing spectacular things, they're going to have a dangerous attraction to you, like a moth to the flame. And I looked right at him and I said, Rick, we need to write about that.
Yeah. Universe aligned for you there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a really good EP. One of the things I like about it particularly is the production level, as far as it's got more of an old school sound.
Yeah.
You know, there's a good bit of like reverb drenched kind of at times. And I like that. It's got that wide guitar sound as though it wasn't just recorded with an SM57 up to it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It was all mic'd up and all that. It wasn't directly plugged in. I wanted to do it. Moth to the Flame was intentionally done to sound like it was straight out of the 80s. Like, that was my full intention. So I'm glad.
Yeah,
Yeah.
No, I do some for my own music, so I fully understand, like, trying to look for a certain sound and such, so.
Yeah, and then Dirty Deeds kind of went a little more modern, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
So I think, like, it's time to go more into, like, you know, still be heavy, you know, still have a bit of that old school vibe, but be a little more modern with it now. Like, I did the old school, like, type of recording, and that was actually digital analog recording I did Moth to the Flame on, so.
Yeah.
I was doing that on equipment that's from the 90s, so it was perfect.
It was still pretty easy to get those sounds back at that point as well.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of it comes up to the miking techniques and stuff, though. Like, did you like stereo mic the guitars like wide? Because that's kind of what I'm hearing a little bit to me.
I think I did, as a matter of fact, now that you mention it.
I can kind of hear they're going into condenser mics, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of those old school sounds I hear, and I'm like, okay, that's condenser mics. It's, you know, like Saxon or something like that. I think Saxon.
It was a condenser mic. Yeah, it was. And then my vocal mic that I used, I believe it was a, what was it? I think it might have been an MXL990, I believe used for the microphone. So yeah, and I have like the studio that I went to record it. He had his own MXL990, and I have my own as well, but the quality on an MXL990 is impeccable. That's what I love so much about it.
So what kind of got you into, obviously there's some new wave of British heavy metal influence. How did you wind up finding the new wave of British heavy metal music?
Well, you know, even though Judas Priest was, I guess, old wave of British heavy metal, like it was pre new wave of British heavy metal. Like Judas Priest was like my first introduction to the British heavy metal bands. And then I really got into Iron Maiden. And then I started to, like, you know, look up more about Iron Maiden's history. And then I saw, like, cause like I'm one of those people, I like to do research. I like to look up, you know, facts about bands and all that, kind of like doing homework or reading history books.
Oh yeah.
And so what happened was I just started, like, you know, doing research on Iron Maiden. And then I started seeing that it was a part of the new wave of British heavy metal movement. And then I started, like, listening to bands like Saxon, like Raven, Venom, Praying Mantis, Samson, which was Bruce Dickinson's first band before he joined Maiden, Diamond Head, and then Satan, and like all these other amazing new wave of British heavy metal bands. And I just thought, like, it had such an incredible sound. And then to see that it influenced the thrash metal movement, the one thing that you have to realize that, you know, if it wasn't for the new wave of British heavy metal movement, we wouldn't have Metallica, we wouldn't have Megadeth or Slayer or Anthrax or any of these, you know, big thrash bands that, you know, went on to take on the world afterwards.
I say it on the podcast all the time. I'm like, look, we don't have this if it's not for Venom.
You know? Yeah. That's, you got to give credit to who influenced who.
You know, they're like my, when I go into it, I say Venom's probably the second most influential band in metal history. Absolutely. Just because off of the extreme metal stuff that came from them. It's not just black, it's death metal and all kinds of other shit.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was kind of curious how you got into New Wave. So you got into it at the time as it was happening.
Yeah, like I got into it like, well, I mean, I'm 30, so I'm pretty young for.
Oh, no, you're 30. OK, never mind.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually pretty young. So that's what surprises a lot of people, like saying, dude, you weren't even around.
I mean, I'm 35 and I'm into this stuff. So,
yeah, yeah. No, it's just I'm one of those people. I guess I was just raised on good music, I guess. But I've always had a fascination with the 80s era. For not just music, but even film too. It's an era that can never be replicated. And I like seeing that they do shows like Stranger Things and all that. And Stranger Things, like, I mean, I think I really liked the character of Eddie, that he reminded, like, a lot of people. I remember when that episode, that season had aired, everybody was calling me Eddie Munson, and I would just laugh about it. But I'm okay with that, because I like seeing that metalheads were getting some acknowledgement for it. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a couple more questions here. What's your favorite piece of gear?
So with a guitar, I play primarily out of a Jackson Rhodes, a JTS. Geez, I can't remember the name of it. A JTS, it's either JST something. But yeah, like I could probably surrender my guitar card now.
Nah, it's fine. It's a Rhodes, man. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
All you got to say is Rhodes and it's cool.
Yeah, it's Jackson Rhodes. I love that what I play out of, you know, not just the way it looks, but it gives some very good tone too. And then a very crazy story about the Fender, the Jep. I bought 1985 Japanese Fender Squire Strat. Mm-hmm. And my friend who performed a couple of shows with me, a guy named Kenny Baker, he used to be the guitar tech and manager for Yngwie Malmsteen. I was friends with a lot of the guys from Yngwie at one point. And I still am friends with some of the guys in the current lineup. But anyways, Kenny had told me, because I told him that I kind of wanted to go for some more, maybe possibly some more Yngwie influence, you know, like in a tone, if anything, even though I didn't like go through with that, because I was asked to be a part of a project that needed an Yngwie style. But anyways, so I asked Kenny for advice, since, you know, him being a guy who works directly with Yngwie, and I asked him like what would be a good guitar for that kind of sound. He referred me to a Craigslist link in Southern California, and I contacted this guy to buy this guitar. And yeah, it was a 1985 Japanese Fender Squire Strat. And I remember that was another great guitar that I ended up getting. And I remember I bought it from the guy that owned it was a Vietnam vet, actually, and originally was supposed to be a quick buy and, you know, and grab and go and all that. We sat down in his front lawn and like we cracked open a couple of beers for like a couple of hours, like, and, you know, this, I don't drink anymore, but then he was telling me like a bit of his life story and like told me some of his Vietnam stories, which were very bizarre. And, you know, so like it was really cool that I have like that guitar that I also have is very significant to me. But my primary brand of choice became Jackson. Like Jackson was like the one that, you know, I felt really stuck with me.
Well, they're owned by Fender now too, so it all kind of goes around.
That's right.
So one more question before we cut this thing off. I got to ask you real quick. So with today's availability and the ability to put out music with such ease, what sets your music apart from anyone else's music and makes it special and not just to fall into everything that's out there? Because it's a sea of options for music. I mean, I can go and just for days and not run out of anything. I go for years and not run out of anything to listen to, because it's easier than ever to release music, especially without a label.
Yeah.
So what sets your music apart? Why should the listeners to this podcast go and hear you?
Well, because, you know, even though I'm, I guess what you would call a quote unquote modern musician, I'm a newer artist and all that, but I guess I stick to the very traditional roots of like the heavy metal genre. Like you said, like Moth of the Flame has that very old school sound
Yep.
that people would enjoy. And, you know, I mean, like, I like to keep, and in some way, I like to be a bit of old school with a bit of new, like, know about the old school, but, you know, put it into a little bit of new, kind of like what the whole nostalgia thing does in entertainment today. You know, they use a bit of old with a little bit of new. And yeah, because you're right, especially because it is easy to put, you know, release music these days, because you've got YouTube, you've got distribution services like TuneCore, DistroKid, CD Baby, and all those things. So you can be your own label and DIY it, if anything. It's not like back then where the one way, if you wanted to get heard, you had to get radio airplay or get signed with a label or even just get your demos out there and had your shows performed. I mean, it's an era where we're in an era where the digital age has become much more advanced along the way. And yeah, like you said, putting out music is so much easier now. But that's what's great about the internet, is that people can discover new music at the click of a button and discover it just by searching on the internet. So that is the good part to it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that what does separate me from like the other bands and all that is that I like to keep it old school, you know. And some bands, you know, they want to just stay a little more modern. I am going to go down a little more of a modern, like a little not too modern, like, but kind of like the same sound I did with Dirty Deeds, but like, you know, gonna go a bit heavier. And I'm gonna probably try to get John Gallagher back on board when he's not, you know, busy with his commitments with Raven. So we'll see what can happen with that.
All right, well, man, I appreciate your time. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to go listen to Ed Gage, he's on all major streaming networks, his shows are on all major streaming networks. But his music is on all major streaming platforms for music. I will have links in the description of this podcast, so be sure and go check that out. I'll have his website, socials, and where you can find to listen to him. And Ed, thanks again for joining me today. I appreciate your time, buddy.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And whenever I've got something new out down the road, I'll be back.
All right. Yeah, hit me up. Hate to cut it short, but I'm on a tight schedule today, folks.
Oh, no worries.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Take it easy.